From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Or Redwood City, California.
Hayward?
Near Richmond District, kind of.
I'm from Concord.
Martinez.
Hercules. I'm from Marina, California.
SF State, wherever that is.
Coming up, we'll talk about how to make a city green on borrowed land.
It was just a fallow lot. It was just an ugly weed lot. So we told them we'd take it from an eyesore to eye candy.
And we'll visit a school where lunch is so good, teachers want to eat it too.
It's yummy and delicious, and we're having milk and vegetarians.
And then we'll head for the hills to a building so bright it shines.
My wife and I were married in this temple, and the words were, because it is in this sacred and holy place, we hereby make the marriage one for time and for all eternity.
That's coming up today on Cross Currents. We all know San Francisco is crowded. It's packed with people, buildings, cars. The San Francisco metropolitan area is the second densest in the nation, after New York City, of course. But San Francisco is also one of the most fertile regions anywhere, with exceptionally good soil, climate, and water to grow food. The city does have a few farms. The Alemany Farm, for example, covers a relatively expansive 3.5 acres. But given the constraints of the city, people who want to use San Francisco's full agricultural potential need to think small. So a project called 49 Farms aims to help people do that, in part by challenging their ideas of what it means to put down roots. KALW's Charlie Mintz brings us the story.
Carrie Hughes stands on the sidewalk near a chain-link fence on the corner of Fell and Laguna Streets in San Francisco. Behind us, cars roar past the rows of tidy Victorians. But Hughes is more interested in the wide, sloping lot in front of us, on the other side of the fence.
This is how you get on the Bay Bridge. This is how you get onto, 101, etc. But that was, back in 1989.
She points at a strip of cracked pavement cutting through the lot. It's the last remnants of a freeway on-ramp that collapsed in the Loma Prieta earthquake. From then until 2010, this space was abandoned.
It's 21 years that this area was not used, as far as I know, for anything outside of just drug use and trash. So
that's all gone. Now the lot's occupied by the Hayes Valley Farm. It's 2 acres, sunny in parts, shady in others, with tall trees clustered in the center. The pungent smell of compost wafts over beds of chard, kale, bamboo, all sprouted, quite literally, from the freeway's remains. The farm produces thousands of pounds of food a year. Making that happen took a big idea.
Permaculture.
It's a design method focused on using space efficiently, working with nature, and sustaining resources rather than depleting them. It aims to get the most use out of the least amount of space, which makes it perfect for urban gardening. As an example, Hughes points out a spiral mound of dirt at the south end of the farm.
The mound is about 3 feet tall, I guess, and about 4 feet wide. It does look like a little volcano.
It's actually a super efficient herb garden.
Basically, it's building up, and so you basically are going to get definitely 2x or 3x or even 4x the amount of food off of this same square footage of space.
Permaculture is everywhere at the farm. It's in the farm's shape, which uses natural slopes to draw water downward. It's in the seed library, which houses and shares special seeds that thrive in San Francisco's climate. It's even in the ground you walk on. Back in 2010, volunteers covered the site with more than 80,000 pounds of cardboard and organic matter to create a rich, human-made soil. These are all big ideas that fit well in this small space. But maybe the biggest idea was one that, on its face, actually seems like the opposite of permaculture.
Since September 2009, when we started designing the project, we designed it to be temporary.
Jay Rosenberg helped start Hayes Valley Farm. It's on property owned by the city of San Francisco, and he says the project was always meant to be a placeholder, something to do with the space until the economy picked up and a developer built it out.
Sort of like the city has a driveway and they're letting us put a lemonade stand on it.
In technical terms, this is an interim use agreement. That's what allowed the farm to operate for the past 3 years. The interim's up, though. Construction on a condo/retail development is set to start sometime in 2013. And what Rosenberg calls the freeway food forest is supposed to clear out entirely by the summer. But Rosenberg says that's okay. Permaculture is a way of designing for the long term, of planning for sustainability under any circumstances. Knowing the farm site would be temporary, let the farmers make plans to endure. To see how, we'll have to follow the bees.
The sign says
says, caution, no trespassing, honeybee yard. Do not disturb the honeybees. Their pollination work ensures our food supply.
Long before they knew exactly when they'd have to leave, Hayes Valley farmers started moving bees from the farm to this site on San Bruno Avenue, right above the 101 freeway. It's about 4 miles away. Hundreds of thousands of bees, almost a dozen colonies, made the trip. Their new caretaker, in her white protective suit, is Karen Peteros, co-founder of San Francisco Bee Cause.
These kind of projects really do build community. Sometimes it doesn't seem that obvious, but if you start up a project in the neighborhood, it's kind of like they will come, you know?
And they have been. Peteros says curious neighbors have started poking around regularly. Some even want to volunteer. For the most part, beekeeping in a city, it's a lot like beekeeping anywhere. But getting the land to keep your bees, that's a distinctly urban story. And one with unusual bedfellows.
It says 1X plus.
Looming over us is a huge Clear Channel billboard advertising a new phone. The lot we're standing on, Clear Channel owns that too. Buildings would block the billboard, so the company always kept this lot vacant. Until Peteros went to them with an idea.
It was just a fallow lot. It was just an ugly weed lot. So we told them we'd take it from an eyesore to eye candy, become a neighborhood asset rather than a neighborhood negative.
Peteros isn't just a beekeeper. She's also an award-winning employment attorney, in case you're wondering how she negotiated with a multi-billion dollar corporation. Long story short, she secured a one-year lease basically for free. In spring of 2013, that lease goes month to month, though, which means Clear Channel can terminate it at any point. Peteros says this is just a reality that urban agriculture projects have to deal with.
You know, whenever you have any property in the city, especially if privately owned, you never can guarantee that you'll have it for any period of time, so we'll just have to take it one season at a time.
If the apiary loses its lease, the bees will have to move to another site. The way the farmers see it, though, that's okay. Permaculture means working with the environment that exists around you. If that means making a garden temporary but mobile, so be it. If that means asking favors from a corporation, fine. The goal, says Jay Rosenberg, is to get as much of San Francisco planted as possible.
I'm checking the map first. We're entering mile 34, and we're leaving mile 27, which is just east of mile 26, where we started.
Rosenberg's driving the city in a van. He's navigating with a map subdivided into 49 square miles. His goal is to see at least one community garden in each. Right now, the map includes everything from a planned bioremediation in Hunter's Point to a school garden where pumpkins grow through a chain-link fence. But there are also neighborhoods that still don't have any community gardens.
And out here, there's spaces that are just pretty much blank.
To fix this, Rosenberg is working with a project called 49 Farms. It's an attempt to link up existing farms, help new ones begin, and achieve that goal of a community garden in every one of the city's 49 square miles. The plan is to make San Francisco agriculture thrive, whether by providing especially resilient seeds or helping aspiring farmers navigate complex city bureaucracy.
There's so many places to make a mistake and to check the wrong box on a form or put the wrong thing in your application that we've made a long list of these mistakes.
Urban gardening takes more than just a green thumb. It takes a creative approach to working in a city, with governments, with corporations, and with unused space, whether it's the lot down the corner or a corner of your backyard. Permaculture is the guiding principle, permanent change the ultimate goal. But in a city developing as fast as San Francisco, where empty lots don't stay empty long, permanent doesn't necessarily mean putting down roots in just one place. In San Francisco, for Cross Currents, I'm Charlie Mintz.
Charlie Mintz reported that piece for Chew on This. It's a new KALW show about the practical ways people are making the world a better place. You can be part of that show's next live audience on Saturday, January 19th at the Soma Street Foods Park in San Francisco. The event is free and it starts at 1 p.m. Again, that's on Saturday, January 19th. You can find out more information at kalw.org. listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. Starting your own urban farm is one way to access healthier food, but most of us just want it to be easier to buy good food. That's especially key when you have to buy your lunch at the same place every day.
Middle and high schoolers will be having baked chicken nuggets, whole grain, and creamy macaroni and cheese.
Yes, the school lunch. It's not always known for being the most appetizing or healthy, but in San Francisco, it's getting an upgrade this year. That's because the San Francisco Unified School District hired a new meal provider called Revolution Foods. Revolution Foods is a private company based in Oakland that serves healthier, all-natural meals to over 600 lunchrooms nationwide. One of them is the East Palo Alto Charter School. As you'll hear in this piece from our archives, KALW's Nancy Mullane reports on the challenge of getting kids who were used to eating corn dogs and pizza to embrace the new, healthier menu.
It's a long stretch of time from 8 a.m. when school starts to 11:30. That's when the kindergartners at East Palo Alto Charter School line up outside the cafeteria to eat their lunch.
It tastes so good, that it's yummy and delicious, because you also eat it and it tastes delicious, and we're having milk and vegetarians.
As they approach the counter, the five-year-olds are just tall enough to grab a white plastic tray, hand over their free lunch photo ID card to the cafeteria manager, and pick out what they want to eat. Today there's macaroni and cheese, a ham and cheese sandwich, apples, carrots, and a carton of low-fat or non-fat milk. Sarima Ding is the school's assistant principal, and during lunch, she makes sure all the students eat.
Because a lot of our students are on free and reduced lunch, so we have to serve them, because we're checking to see that every child is eating, that everyone gets nourishment before they go out and play.
Sitting down at long tables, their feet barely touching the ground, the kids grab their biodegradable forks and dig into their mac and cheese. They are a hungry lot, but today's lunch isn't their favorite.
Chicken nuggets.
Oh, chicken nuggets.
I don't like this.
Do you at least eat a few bites?
Yeah.
Why? Because
I need to try how it tastes.
High five. Good job. Because I need to try it. So all the kids know that they at least have to try.
Standing just outside the cafeteria, holding her own single serving of mac and cheese, is teacher Katie Kling.
I was actually quite happy this morning when they announced that it was going to be macaroni and cheese, and I knew I didn't have lunch.
With just a half hour for lunch, Kling says about half of the staff pay the $3.50 to eat what the kids eat. But she says it wasn't always like that.
Yeah, the food we had here before I would never have eaten. So,
what was it like?
It was like bad kid food, like bad pizza, bad chicken nuggets every day, never fruit, never anything else. It's just changed our whole school. Kids aren't allowed to bring hot Cheetos anymore. They're only allowed to bring a normal snack size of chips, then no soda. It's changed everything across our school.
The change began 3 years ago. The charter school was receiving three services from their local school district: transportation, special education, and food. But Mading says the food being provided by the Ravenswood City School District wasn't meeting the nutritional needs of East Palo Alto Charter's students, and that was affecting their ability to concentrate and to learn.
And the food at the time was a lot of processed food, the chocolate muffins in the morning, you know, lots of sweet, sugary things that were just not okay. And unfortunately, it wasn't just this district, it's nationwide. Kids are getting processed foods that just aren't healthy, and it's just not sustaining them through the day. So as a charter school, we took it to our parents, the option to switch.
After some taste tests and after considering the cost of the lunch options, the parents voted unanimously to make the change. The school hired Oakland-based Revolution Foods as its new food provider at only a slightly greater cost than what the school was already paying the district. Nearly 90% of the students at the school qualify for free or reduced lunches based on the family's income. That means the federal government reimburses the school a fixed rate for each lunch. While the parents were happy with the choice, Mading says the change came as a surprise to the students.
They'd gone off on their winter break and came back to new food. And we're just like, I'm not eating. And in the beginning, it wasn't as good, but Revolution Foods really has its ear to the ground. They try to work around what the kids prefer.
Today, the kindergartners seem to like it. After they finish their lunches, there's hardly anything left on their trays for the compost bins. Then the older students begin to cycle through. I notice the sixth graders are far more selective. While some grab trays, most just pick up a bag of veggies and fruit or a sandwich. Some walk away empty-handed. Alexis Moreno-Nava is waiting his turn in line. He says he liked the old food better.
For breakfast, they used to give chocolate muffins, and they also used to give waffles with syrup and corn dogs and everything. I don't like the food that they give you now.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you eat it?
Yeah, I still eat it, but I really don't like it. The most thing that I like here is the quesadillas and the chicken noodle soup. That's the most I like here.
So when they say today's chicken noodle soup day,
yeah, I love it. I go and I get like four.
Thank you.
Carrots. Thank you. Lina.
After the last of the students have eaten their lunch, I decide to take a taste test. The cafeteria manager puts together a tray representing a complete lunch for me to try.
First, I'm going to start with the macaroni and cheese. It comes in a little black, looks like compostable tray with a plastic cover on it. It tastes very buttery, and the macaroni is nicely cooked. It's just right. Okay, now I'm going to eat the... I wonder how you open this. This is the Granny Smith apples and the very baby carrots, little baby carrots. The baby carrots are delicious. I noticed a lot of students were carrying these bags around.
So what's the trick to making a tasty, nutritional, all-natural lunch that all students will eat? I drive over to Revolution Foods in Oakland to find out. Amy Klein, a former teacher and now Revolution Foods executive chef, meets me down on the main floor of the company's massive, shiny, clean kitchen and takes me on a tour. There are wall-size ovens and deep rectangular skillets that tip so they can pour the food into manageable containers.
So my job as the executive chef is to really refine our food, listen to our students, and put what the students want up against our health standards, our ingredient standards, the USDA reimbursable guidelines, and try to net out a meal that is student-approved, kid-friendly, that tastes good, that's food-safe.
But even if Revolution Foods has schools on board, convincing kids to change their dining habits can be a challenge.
I don't get frustrated anymore because I've learned it's not a sprint. This is a marathon. Like, we've got to get out there. We've got to touch these kids every day as much as we can with this information. And we don't get nutrition education to them every single day. But we're working on it. We're really working on it.
While schools can't control what kids eat off campus, they are finding ways to extend their students' education from the classroom to the lunchroom. For CrossCurrents, I'm Nancy Mullane.
This story you just heard first aired in 2010. Last year, Revolution Foods had a projected revenue of $50 million. And the new contract with San Francisco Unified is projected to bring an additional $9 million in revenue this year. You're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. All week, we've been bringing you profiles of places that intrigue us. It's part of our community storytelling project, Hear, Hear. And now we head over to Oakland, where reporter Isabel Angel visited a place that's iconic in the city's skyscape, a huge gold building that shines when it catches the sunlight. Here's Isabel.
So I've lived my whole life in the Bay Area, specifically in the East Bay. And when I was little, I remember seeing a castle up in the Oakland Hills. My mom told me it was the Mormon temple. And growing up in a non-religious household, that really didn't mean a lot to me, but I did think it was the prettiest thing I'd ever seen. I imagined a princess living in there. Today, I know a princess doesn't live there. The temple was built in 1964, and it used to be open to the public. After about 100,000 people walked through, the Church of Latter-day Saints officially dedicated it as a holy place. So this means when I went to visit, I wasn't allowed to go inside the temple. But I did talk with Jay Pimentel, who's been coming to this place his whole life.
It's for special worship services during the week. In fact, it's closed on Sundays. We hold our regular Sunday services in the church meeting buildings across the way. Also, it is a place where a temple marriage can be performed. This is a marriage performed inside a Mormon temple is declared to be for not till death do you part, but to also carry on into the eternities. So if we were to hold the wedding across the way in the regular chapel meeting house, it would be until death do you part. Here, my wife and I were married in this temple in 1975, and the words were, because it is in this sacred and holy place, we hereby make the marriage one for time and for all eternity. So that's a difference. You know, this is a busy and hectic arena to live in, the San Francisco Bay Area. It's vibrant, it's exciting, it's why I like to live here. It's terrific. But to have a respite, to have a place where it is just this quiet, that one of the sounds I like here the very best is the sense of quiet. My wife and I will sometimes come up here on the terrace and just sit. And it's a good place for us to, each year we like to sit down and talk about, okay, what's happened in the last year? What are we going to do going forward? And how do we do that? This is just a great and inspiring place to do that.
Is there a Bay Area place that has a special meaning to you? You can tell us using our online recording tool. Just go to hearhere, that's H-E-A-R-H-E-R-E dot K-A-L-W.org, and click on participate. That's hearhere.kalw.org. You'll find a link to that along with all of our stories at klw.org. That's also where you can subscribe to our podcast. Listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. Today's team includes Isabel Angel, Julie Kane, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Panina Eilberg-Schwartz, Chris Hoff, RTM's Kunahoffs, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Erica Mu, Nancy Mullane, Ray Sue Sussman, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Also, thanks to City Car Share for providing an alternative transportation option to our reporters. City Car Share is online at citycarshare.org. Also, thanks to you. We are listener-supported radio. Tune in to Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll visit a museum where you can actually touch and play what's on display.
What we're trying to do is show the evolution of the coin-operated industry, you know, the entertainment aspect of that from our earliest machine, 1884, give or take a decade, through the more modern machines, and even the more modern video games are 20 and 30 years old already.
A walk through San Francisco's Musée Mécanique, one of the world's largest privately owned arcades. That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents.
Most of her adult life she's lived unhappy.
Anyone familiar with the dub rock Cali reggae scene may already know the band Counterculture from Novato. The band has been playing extensively through Northern California since last summer, and you can catch them at the 4th Street Tavern in San Rafael on Friday. It's an over 21 show, and the music starts at about 9:30. All that information, along with more local bands, is on our website, klw.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.